listening to C101.5 FM. The Hawk is on the air.
Hey guys, happy Tuesday. I hope you've all had a great evening, and thanks so much for tuning in again this week. I'm Sarah Jessica, and this is Hot Shots on Air, and tonight I'm hanging out with Garrett LaJoie. He is a Hamilton-based singer, songwriter, producer, guitarist, and music educator. You can find Garrett on Instagram as Gar LaJoie and on Facebook and all streaming services as Garrett LaJoie. So, hey Garrett, thanks so much for talking with me.
Hey, no problem. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well, yeah.
Awesome. I guess just to kind of start everything off, how would you describe your sound and style as a musician?
Oh, man, you're starting with the big ones. Eh? I love that.
Right out the gate.
Oh, man. A good song is a good song, and so I just try to write music that that makes people feel good and makes people hopefully something they can relate to, and I try to keep things uplifting and positive and give people a little bit of inspiration and hope for the future, because we all need that, especially the last couple of years. Genre-wise, I try not to like box myself, but I do sort of light, poppy, contemporary, pop rock kind of stuff, and that's what really gets me excited.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Who are your biggest musical influences?
My parents listened to a lot of adult contemporary, and so that's like Elton John, Phil Collins, even like the Rolling Stones, Michael Jackson, so those are pretty big for me. And then some more on the rock side, like the Foo Fighters and Bon Jovi, and some of those more modern bands like Billy Talent and Mariana's Trench, and those are kind of the big ones.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And what do you feel like you take away from those artists and use in your own personal music?
In the pop realm, I'm big on hooks. I'm big on melodies. Mm-hmm. I love something that's very singable, something that you can bring home and it's stuck in your head. It's like the best feeling in the world when I show a song that I've worked on to someone and they go, "Garrett, I was singing that song all night. Mm-hmm. I couldn't get it out of my head." And they always sound a little bit annoyed, but I'm always really happy about that, because that's usually the goal. If you still remember the song several hours later, then that's really good.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Do you remember what you listened to early on in your life, maybe as a kid? And do you feel as though that has an impact on your current style?
Yeah, I think you never... That stuff like always sticks with you. I think you never forget what you listened to as a young kid. It's funny, because when I started guitar lessons, I was about 9 years old, and... we had a book and we learned some scales and whatnot, but pretty early on my teacher said, "Okay, so what do you want to learn, kid?" And I was in third or fourth grade, and I didn't listen to music. My mom played music around the house, and we heard the radio and whatnot, but I hadn't really attached myself to anything yet. And so we would learn whatever theme songs I heard on like the Saturday morning cartoons, and he would kind of laugh at me and be like, "Oh, where'd you hear that song?" And so I didn't really develop a taste in music until he kind of showed me his tastes, and my other guitar teachers following that. Like, I ended up listening to a lot of Queen. Queen for sure was a big one. I'm trying to think who else, but yeah, a lot of that classic rock sound. And then I started watching American Idol when I was a kid, and mm-hmm. and you know, American Idol and those games like Guitar Hero and now that just really opens you up to all the classics, and man, I wouldn't know most of the songs that I know if it wasn't for media like that. And I know people kind of scoff at, you know, big name media like that, how it's a burden on real music and all that kind of stuff. But man, it was so valuable to me to hear, just to have a whole body of music available to me in such like a fun format.
So you mentioned that you started playing guitar first before you ever started singing. You said you started playing guitar at like 9 years old. Is that correct?
Yeah.
When did you pick up singing?
Oh, not for a long time. I was such a nervous kid. Mm-hmm. When did I... You know, it's just funny because I was always singing in the shower. Like I said, I was always like harmonizing with everything I heard on the radio. And it's crazy because sometimes I hear a song that I heard when I was a child, and like the harmonies that I used to... that I heard when I was a kid, like they're still in my head. I remember them all. So yeah, that always came really naturally to me. I used to have a newspaper route, and I would always have, like an iPod with me or something. And I would just be probably, the neighbors probably thought I was crazy, because I would probably just be singing out loud, like down the street every mm-hmm. single day on mm-hmm. my paper route. And one time, I was singing to a Green Day song or something, and so they opened the door to get their newspaper and like were just going to grab it from me, and I just kept singing. I was just in my own little world, and they probably thought I was such a weirdo as a 10-year-old kid. So I guess I've been singing for a long time. I don't know if my family ever noticed that. They never really said anything about it, but I didn't sing in public until I was probably 17 years old, because I don't know, no one in my family sang. I was never in a choir. There, you know, weren't too many musical opportunities. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm from Sarnia, and so there's really not the same kind of music scene and infrastructure, and you know, they don't have the great music programs for children that they have in big cities like Hamilton. And so if anyone ever noticed that I was interested in singing, they certainly never mentioned it to me, and there were no opportunities to explore it. And so by the time I was 16 or 17, I always thought, well, you know, I can carry a tune. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think in one of the first bands that I was in, I ended up singing at a talent show or something, and probably sounded awful, but we had fun. We had a lot of fun. So, yeah, and then I just kind of, my confidence grew from there, and now I love to sing. I'll sing for anyone, anytime.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Why did you choose guitar originally?
My mom asked if I wanted to learn an instrument when I was a kid. And you know, I wasn't musical, or I hadn't noticed that I had any sort of musical interest at all at that point. And I'm not sure if that was motivated by something, or she just thought, you know, a kid should try to learn an instrument at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But she asked if I wanted to learn an instrument, and I said the drums, and she said, "Oh, no way, no mm-hmm. way, Jose, not in my house."
Mm-hmm.
So that got shot down pretty quick. And then my grandfather was a musician, actually. So he played country and bluegrass. And so he played the fiddle, and he played guitar and sang and did all kinds of stuff. And so I think he really tried to get all of his grandchildren to play something. And I've got so many cousins, I can't even name them all, but basically just myself and maybe a couple of my cousins actually got the music bug. And so he bought me a little acoustic guitar, and I can still picture it. It was this like red and black small acoustic guitar, and my dad brought it home and took it out of the box. And that was pretty big. That was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. I think he was pretty stoked that I was going to give that a try. And then, yeah, I just never put it down for, you know, 15 years after that.
Yeah. What do you think that you took away from the lessons that you took playing guitar?
What did to take away, I mean, that is really what developed my interest in music, because like I said, I wasn't really listening to a lot of music intensely. You know, it wasn't like, I wish I had some cool story about how my dad handed me the White Album from the Beatles and it changed my life. Mm-hmm. I really don't have one of those, you know, defining moments, but I think it just exposed me to a lot of music. And yeah, it just gave me something to work on. And there's a lot of self-confidence that grows when you have a piece of music that you work on, and then you have something that you can share. And music, I mean, just makes people happy, whether they have a passion for music or not. It just really lights up people's day when they hear a piece of music that's played well. And so, yeah, giving you something to work on and to show others is really a big confidence booster for kids.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. When did you begin to look at music as something more than a hobby?
You know, in middle school, they made us, did you have to do this? They made us, like, look into careers and colleges and universities, and there was, like, a whole several week curriculum about, like, planning for your future, and I was so overwhelmed by that. Did you guys do that at your middle school?
Middle school? I don't think I did.
It felt so young. Like, yeah. We were 12 years old.
Yeah.
And they told us, look into universities, start picking your credits for high school. And I went, oh my gosh, I don't even know what a university is.
Just a bit of pressure.
It was a lot of pressure. Yeah. Yeah. So that was pretty scary. And so we had to start thinking about that stuff. And I remember talking to my guitar teacher, and maybe I was mentioning that program, and we kind of got to talking about, you know, I always wanted to make music a career, and I couldn't, in my ignorance, I could not understand, how could someone want to be an accountant? How could someone want to be a biologist? Like, that sounds so boring. Like, mm-hmm. how do people really like that stuff? Mm-hmm. And so for me, it was always going to be music. And I didn't know how that was possible. And mm-hmm. I didn't know where I saw myself exactly, but I just knew that was my thing. And so, yeah, even before I entered high school, I always knew that was going to be sort of my career.
Mm-hmm, for sure. When did you join your first band or perform solo?
I was kind of an attention seeker, I think. I was playing for people, like, as much as I could. Mm-hmm. I played every talent show I could, you know, even in that first year of guitar lessons. I remember there was some sort of big talent festival at the local Rib Fest, and so I was up there with my little acoustic guitar, that little red guitar, at mm-hmm. like 10 years old. Mm-hmm. And my mom definitely has a video of that somewhere. I'm sure it's adorable. And so, yeah, that was at like age 10, and then I just kind of took every opportunity I could from there. And then it wouldn't be until late high school that I would start to sing and then sort of start to jam with other people, because, like I said, there wasn't really a music scene. You know, there were music schools, like I had my lessons, but I didn't know any other guitar players. I didn't know drummers. I didn't know anyone who wanted to sing, anyone who liked to sing. I didn't know anybody who wrote music, not for a long, long time. And so, yeah, now, I mean, being in Hamilton now, that's so crazy to think about, because we have such great programs here, and yeah. The children's choir and the HPYO and such great opportunities for kids if they're interested in that sort of thing,
mm-hmm.
which is really great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you said you didn't grow up in Hamilton. You said you grew up where? In Sarnia?
In Sarnia, yeah, yeah. Just a couple hours down the highway.
Yeah. And why did you choose Hamilton?
Well, in high school, when I knew I wanted to make a career out of this music thing, it's a very unconventional career.
Mm.
And some people, you know, are really proud of you for following your passion, and other people kind of scoff at you. Well, that's not really a career. Like, what job are you going to do with that? And so looking into music schools is very, I don't know. It's very stressful because, you know, there's different paths. There's very jazz heavy schools and very classical heavy schools, and kind of nothing in between. And there's a very few number of schools in Ontario that even offer music programs. Like, there certainly wasn't anything in Sarnia. Mm-hmm. And so I had to start looking into that. And it was very stressful, you know, playing music for fun my whole life and being so passionate about it. And then kind of counting down towards your graduation in high school, which is a very stressful time for a lot of people, I think. And realizing, like, I better put some work into this or I'm not going to get into school. Like, I have to audition. I have to, you know, be ready for that moment. And that was very scary and very stressful. But I found, several programs. And I found the music program at Mohawk College, which I really have only good things to say about. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I auditioned. And my guitar teacher was really great in helping me prepare for that audition. And then once I got here, I did the program. And now I make my living here because, as I keep saying, the scene here is so big and so fleshed out that it seems silly to go back to tiny little, small town Sarnia and try to make a career out of this. It's much more feasible here in Hamilton.
Mm-hmm, for sure. How did your family and friends react to you pursuing music?
They were, I think for them, because I had been playing for so long and it was the only thing I talked about, it was very clear that it was my biggest passion. And so when it came time for me to look into programs and sort of plan the next phase of my life, they probably all saw it coming from a mile away. And so, you know, my parents were very supportive. They were not musicians. My mom's a big lover of music, but doesn't play. My dad is also a music lover, but yeah, couldn't play if he tried, or so he would say. But they never stopped me. I think they just saw the kind of passion that I had for it. And I had a plan. I said, I'm going to audition, I'm going to go. And that's that. And I never really heard otherwise. So, that was good. And yeah, my friends were all seemed pretty excited for me. Like, I have a really great friend group, who are all relatively musical as well, even if they're not as crazy about it as I am. And so, yeah, you know, I never really heard any backlash, except from, oh, actually this is funny because, yeah. My teacher at my high school, the music teacher that they had hired, mm-hmm. Was a real sarcastic, we'll say kind of old school dude. Mm-hmm. and he was a teacher. And he always said, if he was trying to start a career in the 21st century, he would buy a van and he would start a plumbing company. And he would be the plumber in town and he would just go right into the trades and make his living that way, which is probably pretty smart, honestly, a lot smarter than getting a music degree. But that was never on the table for me. I mean, yeah. And so when it got, again, as you know, counting down to graduation and, you know, people wanting to move out of town and sort of pick something to study and all that, I was very scared to tell him that I wanted to be a musician because he had mentioned offhand a couple times, like, why would you do that? Like, that's ridiculous. Come on. Like, no, don't waste your time. And he was, you know, a very sarcastic guy, but that really hit me. That was really, kind of scary to not have his support as a music teacher, which is a real shame. And so I kind of hid it from him for the whole school year. And I would go off to auditions and my friends would cover for me. They would go, oh, Garrett's at the plumbing convention. And I would, anytime the topic came up, I would just absolutely avoid it. Because it didn't feel like I had his support. It really stressed me out. And yeah. So, but eventually, you know, underneath all that sarcasm, there was a real kind guy who kind of realized that there was no talking me out of it. And so, you know, I did hear from him that he was proud of me and I've seen him since then. And, we still crack jokes about Hamilton and not, don't be a music teacher. But now I think I have, you know, it doesn't scare me off anymore. I'm really happy with my decisions. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad to hear that. Mm-hmm. What do you think is special about Hamilton's local music scene?
Oh, it's just so, it's so booming and busy and there's such passionate people here. Mm-hmm. And I think like it's very established. There are such great organizations like the Hamilton Music Collective, the great orchestra, great record stores, great venues. Everything is really in place for Hamilton to be a city of music. And then just to match that with the amount of talent and the number of producers and engineers and venue owners and journalists like yourself, Sarah, and mm-hmm. and of course players from the college, which really fosters a really, really great community. Yeah, and it really motivates me. Like I've thought a lot about how I could do this in another town, in another city. Like, you know, there's always a way to make something work, and yet, you know, as a creative person, and you know, musicians have to be entrepreneurs in themselves. I really feed off of other people's energy, and it's really inspiring for me to see other people, you know, on the same grind, working towards similar goals, and with the same passion and work ethic that I think I have. And so I really need those people around me, and going to shows really motivates me, and seeing other bands and how great they sound and how much energy they exude, that really that really lights my fire.
Yeah, for sure. Who are some talented local artists that you think deserve more spotlight?
Oh man, Basement Revolver is awesome. Mm-hmm. I know did they ever do their European tour? I don't remember
They toured Germany. I know that.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
That's awesome, man. They're great. Mm-hmm. Obviously, LT the Monk is so cool. Mm-hmm. I met him when he had just moved to Canada. I met mm-hmm. him on like his second day here. And he said, yeah, I'm from London. And I went, great, what the heck are you doing here? and you know, he's done really well for himself. We're really proud of him. Man, Tara Lightfoot is so great. Mm-hmm. All these people, they bring, you know, such a positive energy. And they really have such a passion. And they mm-hmm. work so hard.
Really repping Sonic Onion there.
Yeah, the Sonic Onion crew, mm-hmm. They're awesome. But then, you know, all my colleagues from Mohawk are all working really hard, like mm-hmm. Life in the Tribe and Woolly Mantis and oh man, there's just, it's funny because I haven't been to a show in so long. I could probably give you a list a mile longer if I had been to a bar in the last year and a half.
But, oh yeah.
Yeah.
I know, there's so many, it's impossible to ramble off every single talented musician in the city. It's like, mm-hmm. it's insane. Who is a dream collaborator of yours? And you can really go big on this one, like really shoot for the stars.
Oh my gosh. I'd love to write with Ryan Tedder from mm-hmm. Warner Public. Do you know him?
I do, yeah, yeah.
Man, he's, I don't know how One Republic got so big, but they've been around for like, I don't know, probably 20 years now. Mm. And Ryan is really just a powerhouse, like producer, writer, mentor, and everything he writes. Like I said, I'm such a big melody guy. Everything he writes is so hooky. Mm-hmm. You hear Apologize for the first time, and then it's just stuck in your head for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. So that would be amazing. Yeah. That's a big one for sure. I'm really into Donovan Woods right now. Okay. And Donovan, I know you're from Sarnia. So if you ever want to, you know, meet me at the Blue Water Bridge, I'd love to write a song with you.
Hopefully that happens. Cross my fingers for you.
I'm just putting it out there, Donovan. I'll keep tagging you on Instagram until you look at me.
The offer's here. And who is someone you'd love to collaborate with that's local?
Oh man, that's a great question. Mm-hmm. I'm so lucky to be so connected with a lot of people in Hamilton. I have my hands in a lot of different pots. Who have I not collaborated with that I'd want to? Man, LT the Monk and I have never worked together, mm-hmm. and we chat a lot. And it's interesting because I'm such a hook guy, a pop guy, and he's very focused on the art of rap music. Mm-hmm. And so he really stays in his lane and does it very, very, very well. So I'd be very interested to hear if he ever wants to sort of venture outside of that and talk about chords a little more if he'd be interested in doing something together.
Yeah, well, pop and hip hop, I mean, they automatically go together, so I'm sure you figure something out.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome. Looking forward to that. So you released your debut EP, Morning People, back in 2019. Can you describe some of the running themes throughout that project?
Yeah, Morning People is a collection of songs that I had written over the past 2 or 3 years. And, you know, I was just writing so many songs, and I had such a creative bug that I thought, I gotta record something, and I gotta put it out there. And I try to inspire with my music. I try to help people sort of see both within themselves and outside themselves, and hopefully you know, I like to pick people up when they're feeling down and sort of help them discover themselves. And And that's for other people, but also for myself. You know, writing is very therapeutic, and whenever you write a song, it feels like you're writing in your diary, and then you're halfway through writing your song, and you go, boy, am I going to let other people hear this? That's pretty scary stuff, but I'm just going to, am I going to sing these words to a lot of people someday? And you just do it anyway, because you have to, and people want to hear the real stuff. They want to hear the vulnerable stuff. So, that's Morning People.
Why the title?
Morning People, I was thinking a lot about how you're expected to like get in the rat race and like get up at 6 a.m. and like drink your smoothie and go for a run before you go to the office, and just like, you know, the early bird gets the worm, right? And if you don't fit into that 9-to-5 culture, then you're seen as lazy, or you're seen as, you just haven't grown up yet. When you're an adult, you'll get up at the crack of dawn every day, and you'll really work hard. You'll really put some work in and get a real job. Right. And I was never a morning person, and I always felt guilty about that. Anyone who's ever seen me before like 10 a.m., they know I'm a wreck. And so with all these themes on the record of self-growth and development and maturity and empathy, I was just really thinking about, like, you can't change who you are. You can't change yourself in some ways. And so I thought, I'm never going to be a morning person. But you don't have to be a morning person to be the best version of yourself.
Oh, me neither. I mean, I love the title because I definitely relate. I'm definitely not a great in the morning. So I can definitely empathize with that.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite track?
I feel like it rotates over time. You know, I'm really enjoying track 5, which is called Sing It Out. And there was a time when I was not going to put that song on the record. I was very nervous. I self-produced this whole record. And so I had some good friends who, obviously lots of great players on the record, but some good friends who I bounced ideas off of and whatnot. And Sing It Out, I was just feeling very nervous about it. And, you know, it's a lot of notes on that one, a lot of singing in that one. So it was very scary, and it almost didn't make the cut. And then it was my good friend Aisha from Life in the Tribe who said, no, Garrett, like, you've come this far. You got to put it out. And I'm really glad I did. So, yeah, that's track 5. And you can hear that on Spotify and all the places, I guess.
Beautiful. Who did you work with to record and produce the project, and how was that process for you?
So this was a very ambitious project because it's mostly recorded in my bedroom.
Nice.
And I think it turned out pretty well, all things considered. I demoed everything at home. I have, obviously I've got a couple of guitars and I know my way around, how to program drums and keyboards and all the tools you would need. So I kind of put all that together. And then once I was happy with the song, I booked some studio time to get, some real live drums And that was basically it. And so it was sort of a labor of love. I sort of treated making the record as my part-time or full-time job for about 3 or 4 months. And yeah, it was a lot of fun. And then my executive producer, Nick Hurst, he plays in that band, Woolly Mantis, and he's got a great, great ear. And he's really good at carving out songs and just finding what the song needs to be and not trying to force it. Mm. So, yeah, he was really my right-hand man to figure out how we were going to make something cohesive and compelling. And, yeah, I think the EP is really a journey. Like, I think every song is still feels like me, but I think they all have pretty different vibes. And so I really think you get a very fun sort of 22-minute journey when you listen to that record, or so I hope.
Sure, yeah. How was the reaction from, like, family, friends, listeners? And how did you go about marketing it as an indie artist?
It was pretty positive, I think. You know, I had put out a few tracks before that. I have another EP, which was mostly physical discs, so it's kind of hard to find. But it was all acoustic, and that was sort of my first venture into songwriting several years ago. And then, yeah, I had a couple singles after that. And then, yeah, to make this kind of leap up, you know, this record has live horns, it has violins, it has mandolin, mm-hmm. It has live drums, it has harmonies. I really went, like, the full nine yards as much as I could. And so, yeah, it was kind of a big step up in production value and in scope. So, yeah, I think it came across pretty well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What do you hope your audience takes away from the album?
You know, like I said about being a morning person, like it's, I think it's bigger than that. I think it's just about, you know, the first track is called Cold Shoulders, and Cold Shoulders is about, an experience I had where I played, I had like an audition and I didn't feel like it went very well. And it was a very, very nerve-wracking experience. And I felt like I really butchered the song. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I kind of embarrassed myself a little bit. I was very outwardly negative in the aftermath of that audition. And, oh yeah, yeah, no, no, that sounded terrible. Like, I'll do better next time. Yeah, it kind of shook me up a little bit. And then that day I went home and I wrote Cold Shoulders, and it was about looking back and thinking, you have to remember, like, every emotion passes, every feeling of excitement eventually goes away. Mm-hmm. And every feeling of anxiety and fear and terror, like, it always subsides. Yeah. And so Cold Shoulders and I think the whole record kind of goes back to just remembering to keep your head up. Mm-hmm. And not getting caught in the wave of emotions that we all go through.
For sure, yeah. Well, we're going to hit pause on this conversation for a quick second and play everyone a Garrett LaJoie single. Why Can't I is a soft rock single from Garrett's debut EP, Morning People, about longing for love.
Time seems to be against me. The days keep flying by. Romance running on empty. Lover's well's running dry. I got a lot of love to give. I'm a sensitive guy. If everyone finds love, why can't I? Maybe I'm too broken. Maybe I'm too shy. Everyone finds love, why can't I? Maybe I'm too picky, or my hopes too high. If everyone finds love, why can't I? My heart's getting rusted. It's been left out in the rain. I guess it's over trusting. It's seized up from the pain. I'm willing to work it out. hardworking guy. If everyone finds love, why can't I? Maybe I'm too broken, maybe I'm too shy. If everyone finds love, why can't I? Maybe I'm too picky, are my hopes too high? If everyone finds love, share a lifetime with. I'm caring and I'm loyal, stay by your side. If everyone finds love, why can't
For anyone just joining us, this is Hot Shots On Air, and tonight I'm speaking with Hamilton-based singer, songwriter, producer, and music educator, Garrett LaJoie. So we just came back from playing Why Can't I, a single from your 2020 EP, Morning People. Can you tell me the theme behind that single and what the lyrics mean to you?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Well, you know, I think it sort of speaks for itself, sort of longing for love, and the tagline, if everyone finds love, why can't I? And sort of just waiting for your moment to find that special someone. It's interesting because the lyrics to that one are written by a collaborator who I've never met. And so there's a, it was sort of an online collaboration, with this guy from the States. And when the record came out, you know, I told him it was going to be the single, and I kept him sort of involved all the way through, but he was sort of a lyricist, only, and was just really excited to hear someone flesh out, his music. And yeah, his story was just so easy to write to. The song came together really, really quickly. And so, yeah, I mailed him a bunch of CDs out to, I think he lives in Maine. And so, yeah, he was pretty excited about that. So, yeah.
Awesome, yeah. How long did it take to write?
That one? Oh, I probably have my book right here somewhere. I don't go far without my book of songs, and it's in here somewhere. That song, probably less than an hour. It came together pretty quick. You just get lucky, and you strike gold sometimes. I think you kind of have to slog through a lot of songs and slave over them for nights and days and weeks at a time. And just to earn those songs that come really, really easy and come together in, you know, 1 hour.
What were your listeners' original reactions to the single when it was released?
It was fun because, you know, I did a fair bit of promo, but I don't know if anyone really saw it coming that I was coming out with this record. And so, yeah, when the single was announced, the title, Why Can't I, it can also be thought of like, well, why can't I? Like, I can do anything I want. And so, I don't know if anyone even knew that it was actually a love song until they heard it. And yeah, everything I had done prior to that was really just gentle acoustic with a couple of guitars and my voice and nothing else. And so, yeah, we really ramped up the production on this one and made it very, big and epic, and it's got, you know, you heard the strings and all that kind of stuff. And so, yeah, it was kind of a big step up for me. So it was really exciting.
Mm-hmm. What do you hope your listeners take away from that single?
Why can't I? You know, love is out there for you, and you can't rush it. Yeah, that's basically that. People get so caught up in, oh, my friends are all partnered up, and why aren't I? What's wrong with me? One of my best friends just got married on the weekend. It's one of probably my first friends to get married, and mm-hmm. everybody else is like, oh, like there's the first one. Who's yeah. next? And yeah. so I feel like that's like a weird game that we'll all be playing over the next several years. And so, but there's no rush, right? There's no timeline for life.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. So not only are you a singer-songwriter yourself, but you're also a songwriter and producer for other artists. You're kind of known amongst like the Hamilton indie scene, but majorly the Mohawk indie scene, for producing music for a ton of local artists. What was the latest project you worked on?
The latest project, I'm trying to think what I can say publicly, because there's a lot sort of in the works.
Yeah,
the last single you would have heard is probably Type by Life in the Tribe, mm-hmm. which is very hip-hoppy, which was a lot of fun, because I like to sort of switch things up when I'm working with other artists, because I can never, you know, drop an Atlanta trap record under my name, but I can certainly do it under someone else's name. So, yeah, this and more Life in the Tribe stuff is on its way. So we're really excited about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to that. When did you start getting into producing? When was that interest peaked for you?
I've been producing for several years. Like I said, I've always had the music bug, and producing came so naturally to me, because I'm such a go-getter. I can't possibly wait for someone else to help me start a project.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also kind of terrifying to get other people involved for the first time if you've never worked extensively with others.
Mm-hmm.
And so producing always just felt like a necessity to me if I ever wanted to release any music.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the first thing I ever produced was my cousin. Is a DJ. His name's DJ Beatzilla.
Mm-hmm.
And great name, by the way. Don't you love that?
Oh, I love it. Yeah.
Beatzilla. Yeah. I think it's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So Beatzilla is, you know, we're really, really close. And so he was a DJ, and then he sort of got into producing his own music after a little while. And he, you know, he was asking me, oh, you ever record your own music? And this was a long, long time ago. And I said, oh, absolutely not. Like, I don't even know where I would begin. I hadn't even thought about that. And, but then over time we started, doing some music together, just, programming drums and kind of exploring, you know, what people have access to in their home studios, which is a lot, because I still work out of my home studio. And so, yeah, he kind of opened my eyes to that world, and I kind of did it on the side. And then, I mean, yeah, that allowed me to, I've self-produced, three records now. So the Morning People record, there's actually two EPs, before that, which are a little harder to find, but that kind of allowed me to cut my teeth a bit. And then as far as producing for other artists, I mean, the selfish side of me is always like, I never want to keep myself in one genre, in one lane. And so I have so much fun making this, you know, upbeat hip hop music, or whether it's electronic or whether it's dancey pop stuff. Like, I always loved that. But I didn't want to put it out under my own name.
Mm-hmm.
And so, once my colleagues and my friends sort of, became comfortable showing me their music and, you know, wanted to put music out, but didn't know how to, and how to really put it all together and make it happen. I kind of realized, like, oh, this is a lot of fun being able to work on a song, but my name's not going on it. And so the pressure's kind of off me. And so it really allows me to, I think, reach my full creative potential, because there's nothing holding me back. I look at the artist's brand. I look at, where their music, is currently at, where they want to go, where do they see themselves, where do I see them going, and I try to work with them, with all those things in mind. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Do you remember the first project that you produced that you were really stoked for?
It might be the Morning People record.
Yeah.
Because I really took it seriously. And like I said, I treated it like my job for several months, and all of the little projects that are just sitting on my hard drive that no one gets to hear, and all the playing on other people's recordings and writing and playing in bands, I think it all was kind of leading up to that project. And so, yeah, I'm really happy with how that turned out. I did my own mix on it. And so, yeah, that was very cool. And that kind of gave me the confidence once I had, a product that was out there and a body of art, it made me realize that, you know, this is very achievable, that you can do this with not that much money. There's really no barriers to making music anymore, which is so exciting.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Do you prefer working with certain genres or types of artists?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I do a lot of upbeat pop stuff. I love music that's danceable and infectious and hooky. I think that's so much fun, and people really latch on to that stuff, musicians and non-musicians, of course. When I work with an artist, I mean, often I will hear them play a song. Either they've sent me a demo, or I hear them play it out at a venue or something. And if I get excited about a song, then I will approach them and ask if I can produce it for them if someone else is not already on it. And so I really prefer to work on songs that I'm passionate about and that I have a vision for.
For sure.
And so when someone reaches out to me, I'll ask them, hey, send me 3 or 4 songs that you're happy with, and let me tell you which one really inspires me and that I can deliver you a product that we're both really proud of.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Do you want to name drop some artists that you either produce for or play for?
Yeah, Juliana Jones. We have some more stuff in the works, and yeah, she has some new stuff coming out. Oh, I hope soon. I hope soon. I don't have any release dates for you. But no, she's been great. Life in the Tribe has been really great. I was working with an artist called Ground Waves, who has a couple singles, and a couple singles are on the way. And then I used to play with Cassidy Cummings, who does country, and I'm really hoping she's going to drop some music very soon. So yeah, I mean, you can find all those artists on, I think Instagram is really the place to go. And yeah, keep your eyes peeled. And then on my Instagram, I post everything that I'm working on. So yeah, you'll be the first to know when something drops.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on that, guys. Go check it out. How do you feel that your producing has changed since you first started?
You know, as a singer-songwriter, like I am really all about starting with that great song. And so if the song that I'm presented with, I don't feel is hitting a home run, I will always start with that and making sure that we have a song that's infectious and memorable and has a clear vision. And so I think I've stayed true to that in everything that I work on. If we don't have a great song, we definitely need to start there. And now, you know, it's all the nerdy stuff. Like, I just want the coolest sounds. I want the coolest synthesizers. I want the coolest hooks and drum noises and effects and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's always evolving. And like I said, there's so much. There's no barriers for entry. You can have every sound in the world at your fingertips nowadays, or so it feels like. And so, you know, I'm really not opposed to, you know, stealing ideas and getting inspiration from other artists. And if there's a sound or a style that gets you really excited, I say, great, let's try to replicate it in a way that feels natural for us. That's one of the first things I always ask an artist is, make me a playlist of what you think this song could be. Like, what are your favorite songs? And if they don't have a vision, I will say, okay, if you don't have a vision for this song, just send me your favorite songs just in general. And in that catalog, I can usually pull out some trends as to what excites them about music and how can we fuse that with what excites me about music.
Definitely. So you work for the Hamilton Music Collective. Could you describe to me your role there and what projects you've had your hand in within that organization?
Yeah, that's a really cool organization. So they're a nonprofit organization that I've actually been working with for, oh, I was counting yesterday. I think it's like 5 years or almost 6 years now.
Wow, congrats.
No, it's been great. And so I've been teaching with them and doing a lot of their sort of behind the scenes marketing and promotion. And so their biggest initiative is called An Instrument for Every Child, which is a free program that is provided through partnerships with schools. So they have partnerships with the public school board, the Catholic school board, as well as even like the Boys and Girls Club and some of the local City of Hamilton rec centers. And so they have a great team of passionate teachers who are, you know, serious music teachers, serious players, composers, from all like disciplines, like classical, contemporary, formally trained, informally. It's a very passionate team, and so that's where that word collective comes from. I think it's a really great team of instructors, and so through that team they're able to provide free music lessons to children across I believe it's 16 schools, and as well they just reopened their home base at the Gasworks last year. And you may have seen the big spread in the Hamilton Spectator last Saturday. Mm-hmm. So they'll have music lessons there, and the Gasworks is also a venue. And so they put together some great jazz concerts as well. So, yeah, it's a small organization, and so it's given me a lot of room to grow and a lot of, you know, they've given me a lot of space to be involved and help them grow along the way, which is a little scary, but also really exciting to have my hands in a project like that.
Yeah. What do you feel as though you've gained from working with them?
Oh, man. You know, it's amazing what the Music Collective is able to accomplish, and you wouldn't believe how small the behind the scenes team is for the amount of impact they have. Like, I believe the number is they've taught over 6,000 children in the past 11 years. Through all of their classes, there's over 300 weekly classes that happen every week, mostly online at this point. And so you add those all together and then add some of the opportunities they've given their students. I was really stoked to bring one of the bands that I coach, these teen bands, these youth rock bands, and allow them to actually play at Supercrawl. And so those kids have played at Supercrawl a couple of years in a row. And so it's really cool to bring them out of the classroom and into the real world so they can see what it's like on that great big stage.
You also sit on the music advisory team, and you act as chair for the Musicians Entrepreneurship Conference Working Group, big title, which takes place every October. What inspires you to dedicate your time to these organizations, and what do you feel you take away from your time in these communities?
Yeah, I mean, I was really honored to be asked to be on that group. And I think it's really amazing that Hamilton has an advisory team like the City of Music Advisory Team, with people from, you know, every sector. From we have representatives from the library, from the Chamber of Commerce, from venues, from retail, from recording studios, to working musicians like myself. And so, yeah, I think it's a great group, and I'm really honored to be a part of it. And the Entrepreneurship Conference has kind of been my focus. And so in working with a lot of artists over the past few years, we were trying to identify the gaps, because you know, the title is Musicians Entrepreneurship Conference. And so a lot of musicians, they want to be career musicians, and they kind of forget that, well, that means I have to be an entrepreneur. And how that's not something that people are always ready to take on. or even if they are ready to take it on, they don't know exactly how to do it. And so this is an opportunity for people who are either established or are very new to taking their music seriously in a career-minded way. And so we have some great topics this year. I'm actually going to be hosting the topic on co-writing and collaboration with some really, really special guests that I don't think I can reveal yet. But if you check out at Hammont Music, that's where all the announcements are going to be. And so for local musicians, there's going to be five talks across the week of October 18th. They're all virtual this year. I think it's a really great format. You can submit your questions in advance, or you can actually join us on our Zoom call and submit your questions in the chat, and then these pros will take your questions, or I guess I will take your questions. So so that's going to be a lot of fun. So we're covering co-writing and collaboration. We have a chat on how to brand yourself authentically. We have a mental health specific talk that's brought to us by Over the Bridge, which is a great local nonprofit for musicians and keeping their mental health in order, and also knowing your worth and how to negotiate with people, and how to book a gig and make sure you're being paid properly. And there's a lot of shady guys out there in every industry, but certainly in the music industry. And so we're covering a lot of different facets of the industry, so I'm really excited about that.
Awesome. What can we look forward to seeing from you?
From me, oh my gosh. It's a lot of behind the scenes stuff, which is kind of where I like to be nowadays. Yeah. And so check out my Instagram and you'll see all the stuff that I'm producing and co-writing, and who knows where the Garrett Lajoie brand is going to go, if there's any music on the way. But I'm really focusing now on helping other artists get their music to the point where they're very proud of it and they can have a body of work that they feel truly represents them.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today. This was great.
Thank you, Sarah. This has been awesome.
Yeah, anytime. So everybody listening, you can find Garrett on Instagram as Garrett Lajoie and on Facebook and all streaming services as Garrett Lajoie. And we're going to wrap up this episode with another single from Garrett. Foolish Love is a rock track about refusing to give up on life.
What's going on, everybody? This is Garrett Lajoie, and you're listening to Hot Shots on Air on 101.5 The Hawk.